Hey, Jay.
Barnaby Edwards, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Not bad. If I'm on the line, you're on the air.
Okay.
Well, we're pre-recorded, so you will be on the air.
Okay.
How's everything going? How's the show going?
It's going well. We load into the theater tomorrow, and so this is like the big week, getting everything, pulling everything together before we open on Thursday.
Indeed, indeed. Now you have a real treasure here. Regeneration Theater takes shows that in their initial run, if you will, did not fare the way they should, and you give them a new life. But here you've gone one step further. You have found an Arthur Miller play that has never been done in New York.
That's right, at least as far as I can tell. I'm aware of, I counted them up yesterday, and I'm aware of about six or seven productions that have ever occurred, but none of them have taken place in New York. It's played, the original production was in D.C. in 1978, which was a pre-Broadway tryout, and no one picked it up to transfer it. There were a ton of rewrites during that version. And then in 83, Miller went back to the original version, and it was presented in Cleveland, and it never transferred once again. It saw a bit more success in England, actually. It was done in Bath in 84 and at the RSC in 86.
Oh, okay.
And then more recently, it did play Westport County Playhouse around 12 years or so ago. And again, no interest from New York. And recently it's been done in Denver and Budapest.
Though I think that production you just mentioned garnered some acclaim, I believe, because even one of the reviewers coming remembered it from that production. So there are people very excited. The one, not Denver or Cleveland, the one right before that.
Oh, the DC production?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the reviewers saw it there and apparently it garnered enough acclaim that he remembered it, but unfortunately not enough to bring it here to the epicenter of
yeah.
Theater.
There's a fairly famous story about the DC production. In the ceiling, in the title, was this really huge set piece, and it was manufactured in two parts. But they flipped the design on one of the parts, so they didn't actually fit together when they loaded them into the theater. So they had to recast the other half.
Oh, no. I hear that a lot with musicals. That's the first time I've heard that with a straight play, that the set just can't get into the theater.
Well, it got into the theater. It just didn't fit together. It was supposed to slot
right
together, like, you know, if you slot your fingers together, but they flipped the specs when they gave it to the building, to the people who were manufacturing it.
Oh,
so they
right
had to go and remanufacture it.
Now Regeneration Theater, where did you get the idea? Now you didn't start it here. You started it in your native land.
No. I started it here about 5 years ago.
Oh, but you produced in England beforehand.
I did a little bit about 25 odd years ago in the UK. With a writer friend of mine, Paul Emelian, who wrote the play we actually started Regeneration with, which was actually a new play that was a riff on Boys in the Band called Boys in the Club. Mm-hmm. So I was doing that, and then life intervened and built a career over here in the US, and now started to get back into theater about 5 or 6 years ago in terms of producing it.
That's excellent. What gave you the impetus to start something like Regeneration? What was your idea behind it, or why you did it?
Well, I'm fascinated by shows that seem to get lost and pieces that seem to get lost. People slave over them for years, and then they get put on, and through either circumstance or lack of audience seem to get lost, and it feels like, you know, and there's hundreds of plays like that, hundreds of musicals like that.
Oh, sure.
And it feels like it's worth giving them a second look to see if there is something there. And we've been fairly successful so far, I think, in terms of audience reaction to the pieces that we've chosen, that they all seemed to be worthy of that second look.
What's your criteria? Now, you've given yourself quite the interesting, for lack of term, luck of the draw. In some cases, okay, it's obvious why a play didn't succeed. There's a story about the African-American version of Guys and Dolls that was even better than the original, but it opened up during this hideous snowstorm, and so no one came to see it, and it ended up closing prematurely. So you get something like that. But what... how do you decide between a play that is marvelous that just didn't have a good that just didn't have an opportunity and a play that's not marvelous? What's the criteria?
Well, at the end of the day, it comes down to whether I liked it or not, and whether I think let's be honest.
Good for you. Good for you.
Also, whether I think it resonates. With the last production we did was Small Craft Warning by Tennessee Williams. Williams is a writer I adore.
Oh, sure.
And I actually think Small Craft Warnings is, if it hadn't come out, if he hadn't written it in the 70s after he'd become somewhat of a caricature or a laughingstock among the critics, it's odd. I think this applies to Miller as well to a certain extent. After those huge successes in the 40s and the 50s, suddenly... the critics seem to turn on both Williams and Miller, but Williams even more so, I think, more because of his eccentricities, shall we say?
Yes.
And he becomes more of a figure of fun, and they think, you can't necessarily write anymore, but he darn well can. And I think Small Craft Warnings is like has some intensely beautiful writing, and by treating it. Like doing the play rather than, just letting people see that writing and treating it with the respect it deserves. People saw that when they came out and saw our production of it. Whether that will happen with The Archbishop's Ceiling is still, I hope they will. I'm not convinced it's as good a play as Small Craft Warnings, but it's a fascinating play. And especially in the, and it's thought provoking. It covers many of Miller's great themes about the power of writing, about the relationship that people have with power, and corruption, really, and how people get corrupted in small ways.
So you think also time will tell with things, Miller and Williams are gone years and years, so the ebb and flow of their careers are over. Now they're a member of history, so that might actually work in your favor for these shows. Now people can look back and say, I've never seen this from this great master. So you're sort of unearthing great art.
I think that's correct. And then there's other criteria, like the next show we're planning on doing is The Shadow Box by Michael Christopher. And when you mention this to people, they're like, oh, I remember that play. That was really amazing. But it's not something that comes up in every, in discussion of important 20th century plays. It's exciting to do that. And we did the same with As Is by William Hoffman last year as well, which again is a play that very rarely done, but is just as important step in the recognition of the AIDS crisis as The Normal Heart or Angels in America.
I was going to say part of the reason As Is, and even The Shadow Box, when you get right down to it, may not have had the luster that they did, was because sometimes if a market is glutted, if there are classics at that point, people have to choose which are the ones to remember and which not. So sometimes they just pushed aside because there's too many shows, if you will.
Yeah, in many ways. I think As Is has the misfortune, if you will, to be overshadowed by, the huge arias in The Normal Heart and Angels in America, which
of course.
Are sort of like such big topics, whereas As Is brings it right down to the everyday. It's really just about two people as opposed to being, on national themes, et cetera.
Right. Right.
And politics always plays.
Duh. Sadly. It's in a way, it's very admirable what you're doing. You're almost doing what they did in the days of the ancient Greeks, but you're sort of even solving that problem. That we read in school all the time about how with thousands of plays done in the time of the ancient Greeks, but because of their festivals and their choice of what was to win, there are only a handful that are remembered. But the thousands just fell away because they weren't voted on, if you will. So you're doing quite a service to the authors and to these great works by saying, okay, you got pushed aside then, but here is your spotlight now. What do you hope to happen, if not necessarily with Archbishop, but with do you have the hope or the aspiration that one of your shows somewhere someone's going to go, wow, I had no idea, and want to take it further and put that in an off-Broadway venue or beyond that?
Hey, that would always be nice.
Or at least let's have a line around the block for your production. I bet I know the answer to this. Why do you call it Regeneration Theater?
It's sort of a three-part name, but generally, you know, I'm a Doctor Who fan as well as a theater fan.
Mm-hmm.
So the regeneration piece came out of that, but also, you know, it's applicable. You know, we want to, you know, try and revive our works and see, you know, take a second look at them, give them a second life. Second airing, if you will.
I realized that regeneration just, I thought, was a very intellectual word for what you're doing. And then I saw on your Facebook pictures of you with Matt Smith, and I said, okay, two things. One, now I know who his favorite doctor is, and now I understand the cleverness underneath the name. How do your actors feel about it? Is there a particular challenge that that you as director and artistic director and your actors have in terms of presenting these works? Is there a responsibility that they may not have in another production, if you will?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, the wonderful thing about doing this in New York City is the incredible wealth of talent that we have. You know, we run open auditions. You get actors, they come in and they, you know, they blow us away with the amount of talent, and it can be very difficult to actually, you know, cast. We've been lucky enough to sort of develop a little bit of a repertory so that there are some actors that we like working with. And so we bring them back again and again because, you know, at this level of theater, it's always good to have, you know, a team, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think they respect the idea of doing the work, you know, and let's be honest, what actor doesn't really want to do Miller or Williams, for example, you know, and the same with directors, you know, for this production, it was something that I felt I got and therefore took on the directing of it. But most of the time, you know, I'd much rather bring on, I give others opportunities to direct, especially, you know, from a diversity perspective as well.
Sure, sure. I remember that from seeing many of your cast lists and many of your crew lists as well. What's your main stock and trade? Are you a director? Are you a producer? Your name, comma, and what's that first occupation after it?
I would say it's artistic director more than director. It's really, you know, producing artistic director, if you will.
Sure.
I'm much more, you know, interested in, being, in putting the show together, bringing the team together, leading the team and giving opportunities to artists to, that they may not otherwise get, you know, that's where I like to, you know, I look at myself as a creative producer. You know, in that I have input into it rather than just funding it. But, you know, and I'm in the rehearsal room even when there are others involved. So, you know, but directing is not the thing that is my be all and my end all, but getting the shows together is.
Very cool. There are very few who have your philosophy the way you do, which is excellent. Where do you find these shows? I was just thinking of it now as you were saying, I was like, how did he find the Archbishop's ceiling? How did, you know, now I remember the Shadow Box. I remember the Shadow Box when I was in college. And when I saw it on your list, I was like, wow, how did he remember to find that? How did he know to get that? Where do you find your shows? Where do you look?
Well, I take suggestions, quite honestly. The Shadow Box absolutely came from co-founder of Regeneration, Marcus Gualberto, who directed As Is for us directed Smallcraft Warnings with me. He actually was the one who remembered the shadow box. The Archbishop Sealing, I was actually just in the Strand and, you know, going through Miller plays, and it didn't have an absurdly huge cast. And when I read the back, considering the day and age in which we are living in, a play about whether or not the government is listening to you seemed extremely resonant.
Mm-hmm.
And a play which talks about government control of what can be written seemed extremely relevant. And, you know, I needed to read it a few times, let it sit with me, you know, try and understand a little bit of why it didn't work so well the first time around. I also got in touch with a Miller scholar from the UK called Christopher Bigsby, who directed the 1983 Cleveland production. And he gave a little bit of background you know, the producers had Miller dumb it down in DC, which was part of the reason for its failure there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the published script is now the original one from pre-DC with a few tweaks. So, you know, that was kind of interesting.
But wow. So you, even in this case, you're not only are you taking the unknown production, but you're taking the unknown version of it. Wow.
Yeah, well, it's the version that's now done. Although the Budapest production I mentioned earlier, which is actually available on YouTube, seems to have taken a few liberties, shall we say.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, okay, well, I guess Miller's gone long enough and they're far enough away that they can.
Yes.
Wow, so you go into a major amount of research. You go into a major amount of work before getting a production. Now, every artistic director can claim the amount of work and dedication they go through, but you're looking beyond just the artistic quality here. You're looking at the reason why it didn't work. You're looking at versions of it. You're looking at commentary from scholars. This is so when we see a regeneration production, we're seeing a really well-researched, well-thought-out piece before it ever got to the stage.
Yeah, I do tend to go back and learn a lot about the shows that we put on, because I, you know, I want to make sure that we're being faithful to the author's intent, but also just try and understand, you know, what makes it tick and why it was written in the first place.
Here's the uncomfortable question. Have you ever presented a show under this aegis, and then after it closed, you said, "Yeah, okay, that's why it failed," and you sort of realize why it can't go any further?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think a great example of that is Come Back to the Fire and Dime, Jimmy Dean, Jimmy Dean, which everybody knows the title.
Yeah.
It only ran like 9 performances on Broadway back in the early 80s. And it kind of just doesn't work.
That's great.
It's like this Texas soap opera in a way. But the writing doesn't, you know, sort of live up to the idea. You know, it's not quite, the stakes aren't high enough. If that makes sense.
Right.
It's trying to deal with some really dark themes. But as much as anything, it's a sort of a light comedy. So, and the meshing of those two doesn't really make sense.
Right.
It works as a play. But it didn't have the power I thought it was going to. I'm proud of our production. I think we gave it as good a shot as we could, and we,
of course,
you know, did the play. But it doesn't stand up to the other pieces that we've done so far.
Interesting,
in my opinion.
I think we
got that from some of the audiences as well. They were a little bemused about why it was being brought back.
Gotcha. I was going to slightly disagree. You had a lot of good accolades, I remember, from that production, and I smiled to myself because I saw it many, many years ago, and I thought to myself, well, I guess they did more with it than most people did. So you're to be applauded even on that level, that you've taken work that even that maybe should stay hidden, but you've given it this amazing life afterwards. What's in the future? What are your big plans for regeneration? 5 years from now, where are you? Oh, there you
quite
go.
Quite honestly, that's a big question. It would be, you know, I don't really have an answer for that at the moment. You know, at the moment I'm heads down doing the work, and try, you know, learning all the time, you know, creating, a community, you know, and trying to, you know, encourage artists, to expand. And if that's what we become known for in New York, that would be great. You know, I'd like people to say, okay, that's a regeneration piece, production. I know it's going to be, you know, solid, small scale. They're going to, you know, they're going to show it respect and they're going to have good artists.
Actually, I was, when you said I have no answer, I was drawing the breath to say, well, what about, and that's what I imagine, frankly. I can see the ambition in you and your company. And I imagine there's going to come a point where, students and artists alike are going to suddenly read a play and say, oh, this didn't go well. This should be a regeneration show. Well, regeneration should grab this show. I could see you being barraged with emails from people saying, I have this play that was done in Canada and it just never made it to America. And I could see you being tortured that way. Yeah, that would be really great.
I love that. I love the, you know, Marcus has brought me, you know, Shadowbox. I've had suggestions from a couple of other people. Actually, after Smallcraft, I got a list of about 10 plays from Jenny Bath, who played Violet in that production for us, that I'm still sort of going through as I, you know, make plans while holding down a full-time job at the same time.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's, you know, I was about to say, oh, my goodness, but I realize, yeah, that's what we all do. So for some reason, all us artists have to have two tanks of energy. In this at any
exactly.
point. I could see somewhere along the line a show not doing well on Broadway, closing, and the producer somewhere will shrug and say, that's okay, regeneration will do it in 10 years. And there will be your legacy. Barnaby, thank you so much. Thrilled to hear from you, thrilled to hear about this. When I first met you and I first heard about this, I thought this was probably one of the more ingenious missions that any theater company has had in a long while. So I'm so happy you're flourishing. I'm so happy there's so many shows out there that will get your helping hand. And I really look forward to hearing all that goes on with Archbishop Ceiling.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you. I'll tell all our listeners exactly how they can come and see this rare classic. And I look forward to the Shadowbox as well.
Sounds great. Thanks, Jay.
Cool. Thank you. Ciao. Okay.